Alrighty, we're going to dive in tonight. We've got another section that hopefully is going to help us to go further in our relationships. And it's probably one of the key things that that is absolutely necessary for people to feel like we really get them and that we're connected to them and it builds trust. And this has to do with listening and empathy. And before we get going, one of the things that when I was in my first class at seminary, my first counseling class in seminary, that one of the first things our professor said was that there's 1,500 schools of thought as to how to do counseling. So you can only imagine what the 30 of us in that room felt the second he said that. Everybody was wondering if we were going to have to learn 1,500 schools of thought in order to pass this class. And he said to us that fortunately we're going to group them together and we're going to discuss them at a high level and that we would have the opportunity to learn more about them. And so one of the students in the class asked the question, which school of counseling is the best one? And that led him to stop in his tracks and tell us this story. And that was that they actually did at one point, so this was in 2002, so he said like five or seven years before that, they had come out with a research study on that topic. And what they did was they divided everybody up, like all the big PhDs with all the initials after their name that go to the other side of the business card and all of that, into different schools, general schools of thought. And then they needed to have somebody who was the control person. The control person was somebody that they dressed in the typical therapist garb of the day. And the typical therapist garb of the day has not changed much to today. It is khaki pants and a button-down shirt. So they dressed this guy there. I think I'm kind of representative here of it. They got somebody who had only a GED. They wanted to make sure that he had no psychology classes, no nothing. And they dressed him up in a button-down shirt and khakis. And I think they gave him glasses or something like that to try to make him look a little bit more intellectual. And they told the guy that since he was the control person, he could not say a word to the people he was seeing. He had to sit in silence for 45 minutes of a session with the people that he was meeting with in order for him to be the control person. And he looked at them and he said, like, in silence? And they were like, you have to be absolutely quiet because if you say anything, you might accidentally fall into a school of thought by accident. So you need to be absolutely silent. And he said, so what can I do? And they said to him, you know, if you want to make a couple hand motions, whatever, just keep it light. Don't do very much. The idea is that you're the control person. And so you could only imagine what happened, right? So they take this huge group of people that are doing sessions and they were going to track them over this time period. And what they did was is that they broke this guy down and they gave him a certain number of clients. And the people would come in and sit in front of him and they would start talking to him. And they would eventually say things like, are you going to say anything to me? Is this the way this is going to go? You're just going to be silent? And the guy, like, not able to say anything, would just, like, kind of make these motions and try to get them to keep talking. And then they would really start talking. They would finally start getting into it. And by the end of the time, a bunch of them, like, they have it on film, a bunch of them would walk up, touch his knee, and say, that was great. Thank you. That was great. And they would walk out, and the next person would come in. Guess where that guy ranked out of all those schools of thought? He was in the top 25%. No degree, no nothing. All he did was listen. And one thing that the clients all said when they debriefed everything is they all mentioned that he had phenomenal empathy. They could tell he was feeling what they were feeling. And so literally this guy who didn't say a word and frustrated the snot out of I don't know how many people, he literally was in the top quarter against all these PhDs with LMNOPs after their name and QRSs and degree this, degree that, certified this, Master Grand Poobah of the Month that, with books and all sorts of other things. So what we're going to show you today, or what I'm going to show you today, I'm really hoping we could take super seriously, because it is one of the key things that when you go to a counseling program, they try to drill into you as one of the most important parts of the work that we're to do. And the good news is that it doesn't require a master's or a PhD to do. It just requires you to apply. So let's kind of do a very quick review. Last time we talked about, last time, today, and next time, we're going to be giving you practical tools as to how to get to the core driver, core beliefs, how to develop those deeper levels of relationships. So going from strangers to someone you get really close to, so much so that you're able to discuss actively what God is doing in your life in a very vulnerable and transparent way. Something that goes beyond your 11 o'clock, how you doing, brother, how you doing, sister, kind of thing. And we're showing this to you without preaching, without counseling, without any of that. Just straight up relating at a higher level. Last time we talked about questioning and curiosity. Real fast, what were some of the things that you got from that discussion last time? Yep. Yeah, so you personally, you were able to see what level of intimacy you were on. You were beginning to see it, yeah, based on what questions you were asked or what questions you asked them. That's fantastic. Yeah, so that was surprising with the adult children even, which makes sense. That's awesome. Anything else that you guys got from last time? That was actually the biggest thing which I was hoping we were going to get from it, which is to assess level of relationship through questions, which is great. This tool is all about listening and empathizing, as I just said. And so now let's ask a couple questions just to draw things out. How can you tell? So how can you tell if someone is not listening to you? They turn away. So their body language. What else? Yes, sir. If they can't tell you what they just heard, what you just said to them. Yep. What else? They interrupt. What else? Yes. They change topics a lot. They can't stay with you. What else?
They're texting.
They're texting. Man, that smartphone comes out. What else?
No eye contact.
What else? Yes.
They blow you off.
Any other thoughts? These are great. Yes, sir. Yeah, so they're kind of trying to repeat back some of the words you say, but it has no flow to it, no logic. Awesome. Now, let's go the other way. How can you tell when someone's really heard you?
Like the eye contact.
The eye contact? They move their head.
Facial expressions.
They're engaging in the conversation. What a concept.
Uh-huh.
Ha ha. They're able to respond when you make a joke or whatever. Any other thoughts? Yep. They ask reasonable follow-up questions. Anything else? We're going to hit one of the big ones later. I'll just leave it out for now because we're going to discuss it. So let's get into definitions just so that we're defining things the same. So true listening is when you're paying attention, full attention, especially silently, and to what somebody's saying and what they aren't saying. So oftentimes we also know when somebody's really listening is we're actually paying attention to what they should be saying that they're not saying. And that's often a sign that we're really there. And then usually our body language is aligned in some way. Now, I'm going to expand on the definition of empathy a little bit. Empathy technically is the ability to be able to feel what someone else is feeling. It has nothing to do with agreement. It only has to do with, can I feel what you feel? Whether or not I agree with you is a whole other level. But one of the ways we prove that we are empathizing is when we get somebody else's perception. And when we get someone else's perception and can repeat it back to them, usually that's a sign that we've got it. And they're going to feel like, you get me. And so we actually need to listen in order to empathize. And reality is we actually need to empathize in order to listen well. Both need to be there, or else we can miss the person really easily. And so let's talk this through. Let's say there's no listening and no empathizing. Somebody can say, hey, how was your week? And they say, kind of rough. Jane and I have been fighting a lot, and I'm honestly not sure what's the problem at this point. And the person says, nice. Wow, those donuts look great. I'm going to grab one real quick. If you notice, the first person got totally blown off after saying something really deep. They weren't really listening. They weren't paying attention. They were distracted by the cookies that Marty brought out and had to dive in and get some. And so that's a sign that it's not fully there. Now let's look at listening without empathizing. Hey, how was your week? Kind of rough. Jane and I have been fighting a lot, and I'm honestly not sure what's the problem at this point. That sounds frustrating. He notices that he has huge eye bags and his voice sounds defeated. He says, I hate when I fight with my wife too. And then jumps to, have you prayed for wisdom from the Lord? What's wrong with that? Yes. Yeah, trying to fix them, right? Now, oftentimes we find that people jump to advice really fast. Yes, sir. Yeah, there's no connection. There's no relating at all. And that's exactly the point that I was just about to make, and I swear I didn't tell my son ahead of time to ask that question and give him brownie points for that. Where we often see this... Sorry?
Did he come close to empathy?
He was moving there a little bit. He was kind of there a little bit, but it was a little... Yeah, go ahead. There we go.
Oh, okay, you get it.
Right.
Oh, no, you don't.
That's it.
Just trying to solve the problem.
That's it.
And he made it about himself.
How so? Say that.
Well, he made it about himself, like, I hate that, too, instead of pulling it out more.
There we go. There was no invitation of more, right? So the assumption is I know exactly where you are because I've been there. But do we really? Do we really? Yes. Yeah, it can sound a little self-righteous, right? Yeah. So oftentimes what happens when we give advice too fast is that unfortunately, even if it's the right advice, it's not heard. And it's not received by the other person because they didn't feel like you really got them. And so what winds up happening is even a statement like this would get pushed back and rejected. And where we often see this, unfortunately, and I hope this doesn't bring up pain for you guys, but the classic example of where this happens is at a funeral. It's the classic example. You know, and people try to say the nice, pithy Bible verse when they greet the person who just lost someone really dear to them. And as a therapist, on the therapy side of it, I hear what that person says about all the Bible verses that they heard during the funeral. And how they really felt about all the Bible verses. And oftentimes it's quite colorful what they heard about all the Bible verses because it rages this anger in them. Because oftentimes the implied message when we're listening without empathizing is unfortunately the implied message is you're not allowed to feel what you feel. You need to do the right thing. Bypass everything, do what's right. And there's a level in which that's true, but there's also a level in which that misses the person. And so we just have to be careful with it. Now let's look at listening and empathizing. How was your week? Kind of rough. Jane and I had been fighting a lot, and I'm honestly not even sure what's the problem at this point. Man, I hear you. I hate when I fight with my wife, too. You look exhausted. Tell me more. So if you notice in this short little phrase, and obviously we're doing this super artificially and like super fast just to kind of get through the points, the idea is to connect. The idea is to show them, I'm with you. I'm really with you. And at some point of normalizing, some point of being able to say, I'm there, I'm with you. I have a similar experience, even if it's not the same as yours. Noticing them, you look exhausted. and then inviting way more so that the conversation doesn't go on you. Oftentimes, when we do something like, man, I hear you, I hate when I fight with my wife too, what the other person can feel is, oh, you're making it all about you, like somebody said in the back. And once that happens, there's a disconnect. People tend to not join you anymore. So how can we become better listeners and empathizers? We're going to give you 8 tips. The first tip is be fully present. Be fully present. And so what does that look like? Somebody said the smartphone. Turning it off is like a huge thing, especially right after church when you're connecting with people. Before you meet with others, you could take a few seconds of your to clear your mind in whatever way helps you from distractions. Watch for the urge to prepare an answer in your head, so don't listen to reply. You want to move towards listening to understand. So you're going to get in that mode of, I'm going to pay attention to them. And if you can't be present, you know, there's too many other things going on, let the person know that you want to meet them later when you can give them your full attention. Sometimes what winds up happening is that if you seem distracted, the person talking to you will interpret that in a negative way towards them. You're not interested in hearing me. Usually it hits a down mark. Whereas if you can't do it, you know, it's time to just say that. You know, there's too many things going on right now. Little kids running around my leg. Can't do it. Listen to the unspoken is tip number 2. So what are they saying? What words or phrases are they repeating? So something that often helps you connect to somebody else is if there's a phrase that they're saying over and over and over again, that phrase actually means something to them. Ask about that phrase because they're repeating it for a reason. And it's important that we kind of draw it out. Pay attention to what they're not saying and what they're meaning to say. And then if you can actually get to the essence of what they're saying and say it in one sentence back to them, that's usually really powerful for them, especially if you kind of cut through it. That helps somebody like me who tends to talk too much and just goes on and on. I just need somebody to help me get to the core of what I'm saying. And then if you can even see what's the perception or belief behind what they're saying, that's gold. That's when they really know you're with them. Step 3 is watch for judgments. By judgment, we're actually meaning more like condemnation than actually judgment itself. So watch for moments when you're evaluating or analyzing things in terms of good, bad, like, dislike, agree, or disagree. What we want to do is we want to make sure that we do not judge until we know a lot more. So ask for way more details. Make sure that you get a real understanding of the other's perspective. And just know that there will come a time when you're going to confront, exhort, or challenge your friends or do something along that line. You're always going to do it in a way that's connected so that they know you're for them, not against them. And then when the confrontation comes in, it usually lands super well. And we're going to talk about that later. 4, make sure you can get agreement on your listening. This one is usually the one that's the most bypassed, and this is actually the one that does the most to connect you to the other person. And so what do we mean by that? Repeat back in your own words what you're hearing the other person saying. I'm hearing you say ABC. And then it's very key that you ask the question, is that right or am I off? What happens if you just say this, but don't ask that the question, am I off? What could happen? Yep. You're putting words in their mouth. You're putting words in their mouth. And what would they feel about that? Sorry? Bulldozed. What else would happen here? Sorry? They can feel misunderstood. Just think of what happens if you say, I'm hearing you say ABC, and they say, well, I was actually saying XYZ. They're going to feel like they've just been talking to you for all this time and you're not really there. But literally, just by adding this short little phrase, is that right or am I off, what it does to the person is it lets them know you're trying. Lets them know you're engaging it. It lets them know that you're human, that you're not going to nail it perfectly, nor do you have to really. You're really trying to be there with them. And that often encourages them a ton. And then you want to hear the person say, yeah, you've got it. Yeah, you've got it. Or some phrase like that. And what you're probably going to notice in them is they're going to relax. So they're still in the middle of their problem, but now they no longer feel alone in their problem. And that's the critical piece. Half of the battle in trying to connect to somebody or help them with the problem, more than half the battle, is just proving to them that you're in it with them. You're in it emotionally, not in a codependent or weird way, but in a way that says, I'm feeling it with you. You're no longer alone. It's crazy how many times people solve their own problem once that happens. It's crazy how many times that happens. And what's crazy in my profession is they usually thank us for it. And we're usually like, well, you said it, not me. You know, but it's kind of hard to say it at that point, you know, because they feel so excited by the whole thing that somebody's gotten them. Now, if the person adds or corrects you, keep trying to say that same phrase. Okay, I'm seeing now BCD, am I off? Don't stop the am I off. Because if you keep missing and you're not really hearing them, they're going to get super frustrated. And sometimes that happens, but usually it doesn't once the person corrects. And the idea is to not move forward until you've got that agreement. Until you hear them say, you see me, you got it, that's exactly the way I'm seeing it. Then it's time that you can kind of move forward. Next tip, we want to learn from others. So some of us in this room, according to Myers-Briggs, are feelers. Feelers typically are good at empathy. Feelers typically are that's kind of like a strength. Some of you are thinkers. Your strength leads more in the area of truth. And we're going to use that gift to connect. But in the beginning, we actually need the empathy piece first before we get that truth piece in. And so if you're somebody that struggles with empathy, you might want to look at somebody and pay attention to who around you can observe in action. Who's good at that? And don't be afraid to ask them questions. Literally, don't be afraid to say, what were you doing when XYZ happened? Because you might be surprised by the insights you gain that'll help you do empathy better. You want to pay attention to what they do differently that builds connection and understanding, what mannerisms, other things that you're seeing them do. Just pay attention to the details. What emotions do they express that show you that they're listening? All of that's really huge. Now, a basic rule in a counseling session for almost all the schools of thought, not all of them, but almost all of them, is if the therapist is talking more than 20% of the time, the session's going south. So it doesn't matter how good the therapist think they sound, typically it's going south. And we actually find the same thing is true in relationships when we're talking to one another and engaging each other. Overall, in a relationship, which is very different than a therapy place, is that you are going to have 50-50 overall. But when somebody's really trying to wrestle out a problem, you want to drop back to 20%. Give them space to really get things out. And so sometimes what you want to do in order to practice the listening part is practice talking to somebody by only talking about 20% of the time. Now, what I got to share with you is when I first started doing therapy, I was trained by a mentor in New York. And we had these earpieces in our ear, and there was this one-way mirror. And we never, ever knew when the mentor was behind that mirror, ever. All that you would discover is that they would say something in your ear, like my mentor loved saying, why on earth did you say that? And I would go like this, because I didn't even know he was there, and I was jolted. And my client would say, your mentor's there. I'm like, yeah, they're on. And so the idea was, is my personality type ENFJ is we tend to talk way too much. So he would often say, stop talking. And he would sometimes be really annoyed when he would say it over the earpiece, like, stop it. You know, and I was like, oh. And so one of the things that we got trained to do that was super helpful was in order to stay within that 20% talking time, make most of what you say open-ended questions. And that typically stops you from talking too much. So open-ended means that it's not a one-word answer. they're going to need to give you at length information. And that typically does it really, really well. Next, you want to express your listening. So sometimes we do a great job of listening, but we have a hard time expressing our attention. So leaning in, nodding, doing things like that are really helpful. Maintaining eye contact, doing the physical things that really help the person to know that you're there. Don't overdo the mm-hmm or the yeah, because that sounds very therapist-ish, and we're not trying to be therapist or anything like that, so we'll avoid that. But periodically, yeah. Sometimes it helps to mirror the other person. And so mirroring their body language, mirroring what they say. If there's a word they're repeating a lot, use that word too, because that actually means something to them. And you'll discover later what it means to them as you dive in. Now, ultimately, empathy is about feeling what they feel. And as I said, some do this easier than others. Even if you haven't been in the specific situation, you want to pay attention to the emotion that they're feeling, because the emotion that they're feeling is something you can relate to. So I'll never forget this one time when I had somebody call me and they said that they needed to see me immediately. And it just so happened that somebody had canceled about an hour and a half later, and I gave her that time. I said, hey, somebody canceled. Can you come at this time? And she was like, yes, I will be there. She got to my office, and you can tell she was really distraught, like really distraught. She didn't have time to fill out the normal paperwork that most of my clients do. I was in between sessions, so I was trying to get to the next client, so I didn't even ask what it was about. She comes in, and she tells me that she had just had an abortion, just had one. And she was absolutely devastated by what she did, absolutely devastated. And she couldn't believe she did it. I'm a man. That's not something I've ever done. But yet we can connect. Why? I've been devastated before. I've done things that I couldn't believe that I've done before. I felt really frustrated and hurt. I felt really scared. I felt really angry at myself before. I felt really hurt. Oftentimes, if you're struggling to connect to somebody on the basis of the facts, encourage them to move more to the emotions. What are you going through when XYZ is happening? Once they start pinpointing an emotion, if you silently think of a time when you felt something similar, believe it or not, you will start to feel it in the present. And so this is a tool that actors use, which is called emotional recall. If they have to do a scene where they're supposed to be crying a lot, what they'll do is they'll start thinking about a time when they were actually crying a ton, and then when the director yells action, the tears are right there. And the more you practice emotional recall, the easier it gets. And so it's just a technique that we can do it. To show you guys how this works really fast, emotional recall, I'd like everybody in the room to think of a time when you were cracking up like crazy, like you couldn't stop laughing. And just take a couple seconds right now and start thinking about that. Think about a time when you were cracking up like crazy. And just go ahead and start thinking about it. Notice what's happening. People are starting to smile. Some of you are starting to giggle. Some of you are already getting into that mode. That's emotional recall. And it's just like that. So the idea is to just let yourself feel it. But don't say that you're thinking about a time that you were devastated when they're saying that they're devastated. Don't steal the moment. Just think about it silently. Next, most people can actually sense our internal emotional shift. And so once you tell them, once you're kind of in it with them, they'll actually sense it. They'll actually feel like you're in it, even when you're doing something like emotional recall. So let me slow down a little bit here. What questions do we have so far? Yeah.
This is not a question, but do it. It's something I'd like to say.
Yeah.
When I was in the Boardwalk Chapel in New Jersey about the listening.
Yep.
Is that typically when evangelism, when you're telling someone the gospel about a believer, typically the it's typically the devil's working them to not pay attention. They're basically always looking away. Like it's like some sound happens in the background. It's very faint. It'll still like do a 360, no, not 360, 180 turnaround. But once the conviction happens, they start, it's like amazing. Instantly, they like keep eye contact. They're actually going to, they're nodding their heads, doing, yeah, cool. They're actually paying attention. Instantly, when the conviction happens.
That's so true. So sometimes people are distracted for a variety of reasons, and it's hard for them to focus. And sometimes we're looking for things that help them to get focused. Conviction can be one. Questions can be another. Typically, questions, when somebody hears a question, they get really focused on answering it. And so that's super important to kind of get into. Any other questions that we have? Yep.
Any suggestions for if you're trying to understand what somebody's saying?
Yep.
You say, I heard this, is that right? Is that right?
Yeah, so literally, if you say like...
And you just don't seem to be able to understand it.
Yeah, so if you don't understand it, if you're asking, hey, is this what you're saying? Am I off? And they're saying no. And then it seems like that keeps happening over and over again.
And of course, they're feeling alone.
Yeah, and even more alone and more disconnected at that point. Sometimes that can mean a couple things, but I don't exactly know what it is without the deeper example. Sometimes it's hitting something in your story that you want to avoid. You don't want to feel it. You don't want to engage it. And so therefore, it's hard to hear it. Another example of it is that sometimes you have a certain belief that's going through you. And because that belief is going through you, the words aren't registering the way they should register. So a classic example of this is John 11. In John 11, how many times does Jesus tell them that they're going to be safe, that, you know, he's going to be raised from the dead, and nobody heard it? Well, they had certain beliefs that kind of contradict the possibility of that happening. And then that makes it much harder to listen. So sometimes what we have to do is slow it down and repeat more frequently. Until we get it. So like they say a sentence, so let me just make sure I'm getting this right because I want to make sure that I don't miss you. And then repeat it back and see if that kind of jars you away from wherever you were. And sometimes that works. But if it's part of your story, you're going to avoid it like the plague and not even do that. And that's usually a sign that it's part of your story because you won't do it. Yes, sir.
Is there anything to be done with someone who over-responds? Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah.
I know we got a lesson on that.
Yeah.
How do you get them to stop?
Yes, no, that's actually a really good thing. So here's the thing, which is going to sound really crazy, but I want you to hear how true this is, because if you ask any therapist, they'll tell you it's true. Sometimes people are paying you a lot of money every week, and they actually don't want to heal. In fact, if you try to help them heal, they get frustrated. And if you try to really help them heal, they get even more frustrated. And what happens sometimes for some people is that it's not about the healing for them. They just want to be heard. And so sometimes what I have to do is switch away from the topic of discussion, because it's not about that. And so sometimes what I might say is, what do you believe I haven't heard out of what you said? So if I'm repeating back often and they're still going, tell me what I'm missing.
This is not situational.
Yeah.
Their speech pattern.
Yeah. Okay, so if it's a speech pattern, so tell me more then. About it, speech pattern.
You have a conversation and you tell them something, just they kind of interrupt you, saying, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just frustrated.
Yeah, so sometimes it's some people don't want to connect to somebody else. They want to be the focus of attention. And so sometimes it's like they're saying, enough about you, now back to me. And that's really what they're about. It's just about me, not about you. Now back to me.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. Any other questions? These are great. Yes. If you're more introverted. Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome question. We should have put that up there. So thank you for saying that, because that will catch it and improve it. If you're more introverted, and actually specific introverted types need more time to process. So it's kind of like they can't instantly come up with the answers. And sometimes for those of us who are extroverted, that's really frustrating because we don't do silence well. So if there's a silence gap, it's like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable, I don't know what to do right now. And then we start speaking again. And it's really, really frustrating to the introvert that's processing, because literally what they're trying to do is they're trying to think of the answer and they're trying to be accurate, right? So there's a client of mine that's definitely like that. And for me, as my personality type just talks too much, I literally have to bite the bottom of my lip to make sure that I don't speak when she's on the phone with me, just to make sure I just don't speak. And so the idea is, if you are like that and somebody's trying to engage you and they're not giving you the room to speak, I know this is going to sound especially hard for especially some introverts, is being able to say, give me a second to think it through because I want to be accurate with my answer. And if you say that a couple times, the other person should catch on. And if they don't catch on, you might have to elevate that a notch. I'm hearing you want me to give you fast answers. I'm actually, that's not something I do really well. I want to be accurate. Give me a chance. I will come back. My silence doesn't mean that I'm done, not listening to you or anything like that. I'm actually thinking of the answer. And sometimes you have to kind of phrase it a couple ways that way. And then the person gets it. And hopefully they slow down. And if they're an extrovert like me that has struggles shutting up, you can give them a few different tips if they're friendly and close to you to be able to say, hey, you might want to try biting the bottom of your lip until I finish speaking. I hear that works okay for some people. Or something to encourage it to keep going and to not be that way. Awesome question. Any other questions? Do you have one? Yes?
If I make a statement.
If you make a statement.
And the person listening says, you know, that really hurts me because of such and such. And it totally flabbergasts you because that's not what you meant. How do you crawl out of that hole?
Yeah, so sometimes the person listening to us takes a totally different interpretation than what we actually meant. Sometimes it does hit their story. And because it hits their story, typically that's where we don't listen really well. We're now too much concerned with our own pain, our own hurt, our own past, our own this. Or worse, we start projecting whatever happened there onto the person talking. And that makes the whole connection really hard. So sometimes what you might have to do a little bit is to literally ask that person to tell you more so that they could see that you're trying to connect to them, which usually helps their defenses to come down. Because they're realizing, hey, he's actually listening to me. You repeat back with that person a few times. And then usually you'll sense a shift. And then at that point, you can literally say to them, I actually didn't mean that. Can I share what I meant by that? But if you try to say that too soon, oftentimes the person doesn't believe you. They actually will believe that you are trying to hurt them no matter what you say after that. You just have to listen to them first a little bit, let them talk it out a little bit. Then you can say it. Can I actually? And I usually ask it in the form of a question, asking for the ability to be able to share with them where I am. By asking it as a question, hearing them, having them say yes, when they say yes, they usually have lowered their guard enough that they can hear a bit better. And that often helps it. So it's like a 3-minute segue, just to make sure that the rest of the conversation can go well. Great question. Any others? Fantastic stuff. All right, let's keep going. So now we're going to take 10 minutes to practice listening by answering the questions that are on the board here, on the screen here. So once again, we'd love for you guys to get into groups of three, nobody from the same family together, just so that we can get some new people together. And if each of you could take 3 minutes answering these questions, what's a moment in your life when you felt really proud of something you accomplished? What led up to that moment? How do you feel in the moment? Oh, actually, it's 4 questions, sorry. What feedback did you get after that moment? So if you guys can break up into groups of three, no family members together, go through these 4 questions. I'll stop us in 10 minutes so that people can go to Jerry. All righty. All righty. Let's bring it back forward. Once again, if you need to go to the choir, feel free. We're wrapping up here. Next time we're going to hit another set of practical tools, so not next week, but the week after next week. Just wanted to take any last questions before we close in prayer. Yes?
So we were just having a discussion about technology.
Yeah.
And we're trying to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And whether you're the listener or they are,
yep.
And you've got somebody who's very distracted by that technology.
Oh, yeah. What, you can't take the phone away from them and break it? I mean, like, I don't understand. All right. So one of the things that it depends on the level of relationship. And so the level of relationship will probably dictate this one more than anything else, just so that you're aware. But the basic idea that sometimes helps in a more subtle way is there something really going on that you need to handle? And sometimes if you just phrase it that way, the person's like, oh yeah, you know, my mother's sick or whatever. And then you actually know that there is something really going on. Or they'll say like, oh no, oh my goodness, this is like force of habit. I just do this all the time. And then usually at that point, they'll turn off their phone or they'll do something to turn it over or put it away. And usually they're much better at it. If it's somebody that this has happened a lot to, typically I'm accelerating up. And so, like, I might say that the first time, I might say that the second time, but let's say it's the third time, I might say, when I see you look at the phone often, I feel, and then fill in the blank. And so stick with not facts, but what you feel. So sometimes I might feel really angry. Sometimes I might feel really hurt. Sometimes I might feel really dismissed. Sometimes I might feel whatever it is, it is. Don't judge it. Your emotions are what they are. It's like being pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. So the emotion is what the emotion is. There's no judgment on it. And then if that, like usually at that point, because they see personal impact, most people really do change. Most people at least will, to you, not look at their phones anymore. They might do it to everybody else, but not to you. But let's say you kind of keep going. Let's say it keeps going. I might be much more, especially if we're closer, I might be much more direct and say, I've tried so many different ways to say, hey, I'd love to disconnect, but it feels like that's just not happening between us. Is there something that we need to do to have this happen, or are you just really not interested in connecting to me? And so sometimes with the super direct, I'm willing to help, but at this point, like if this isn't gonna ever happen, I need to know. Kind of thing at that point, either the person actually does make the change or you realize that the relationship may not be quite what you thought it was. And so that's an opportunity to discuss it and bring it out to the open. Make sense? Yes?
Following up on that, Ryan, I've noticed this with men in particular.
Yeah.
On the phone thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of uncomfortable to sit with a phone in your pocket.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of guys are on the phone, but yep. When they sit down, right in front.
Yep.
I used to meet with a guy all the time.
Oh, yeah.
His phone was like this ever-present,
yep,
potential distraction.
That's right.
And I just wonder, I guess side pockets are good.
Yeah. So my phone, here it is. My phone actually has a cover on purpose for that reason.
Because
I can't see it. And the only time that I'll do this in kind of an obvious way with somebody and put it on the table is sometimes I'm having lunch with somebody or breakfast with somebody and I know I need to leave at a certain time, but I usually try to say it. Hey, I've really got to leave right in an hour, so I'm going to keep my phone out. And then the hard thing for me is to not look at it when it lights up. And so it's like a training that I have to like be super intentional about. But let's say it's like I'm with my wife and there's nothing going on, it's Saturday morning or something like that. It would really, really be awesome if we didn't not just keep it in our pockets because that is uncomfortable, but turning it upside down and putting it on the table or even pushing it away from wherever you are, often that's a phenomenal signal to the other person, I'm all in with you. And then they usually take it way more seriously, like this guy means it. And so when we have that flexibility, trying to give it as much as possible. same process as what you're saying with her, if somebody keeps doing it. Or if like somebody like me, when I'm trying to like not look at what it lights. What I had somebody do with me that was brilliant and frankly worked like crazy was they just stopped talking. And then I was just like, oh, so sorry. I've got to leave in another 20 minutes. That's why I'm looking. I'm getting anal with time. And that's not fair. And so it gave me an opportunity to apologize. And then they understood. And then we just kept going. So, awesome. Yes?
Okay, I have a totally changing direction.
Totally changed directions. Yep.
Interpret what you said.
Yep.
And then they're going off and trying to listen. And I imagine that there are times when that's really the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Are there ever times when that's kind of an unhealthy
for sure
characteristic in that person?
Yep.
When you let them go, you're kind of enabling
them. Oh my goodness, yeah.
Perpetuate.
Yeah. So in the example of somebody that doesn't want to heal, most in my world, we're usually trying to fire them. Being very, very blunt, because it's kind of like it's obvious you don't want it. So why are we meeting for this amount of time? You're paying all this money. Doesn't even make sense. And now I'm enabling you by giving you the space. That's not going to be helpful. Is there something else that you want to talk about that maybe you do want to work on? And if not, my door's open. You know, whenever you want to connect and really work on this, I'm happy to. So that's, as a therapist, the way we kind of do that. But even in normal relationships, we can do that. You know, especially if it's somebody that's trying to dominate or always trying to take the center back to them, literally, depending on the level of trust, the same process can happen. You know, something to the effect of, I'm noticing that sometimes when I'm going deeper and I really want to be connected, the conversation gets switched. Is there something going on? Is there something that would help this? Because I really would love to connect to you. And they might say, oh, I didn't know that. They're going to feel awkward and uncomfortable for a little bit. We can actually say things like reassuring them and then get right back in and doing that. But I don't try to play the enabling games, even in friendships anymore. Because what I've noticed is it actually makes things worse for both of us, not just me, but also them, to let it keep going with me. And so I usually try to stop gentle, tactfully, and then accelerate it up if it's just always happening. Yeah, so we definitely don't want to do that. That's awesome. What else we got? Yes?
Do you have any advice for someone in a situation where someone is sharing with them, say, a deep hurt that they're going through, and you feel so hurt with them that you can't stand not fixing it, and you're a fixer kind of person. And so you want the person trying to fix it, they're trying to stop themselves from fixing it. But it's like it's so intense and they're empathizing so much that they can't stand but to try to fix it.
So often where this happens is with married couples. So oftentimes either spouse can be really good at listening to everybody else but their spouse. And it's usually because their pain is impacting you way more than anyone else's pain is going to, because the relationship's closer. And so something that sometimes I'll do if I'm tempted to fix Grace in some way, or she's whatever is going on, is I literally try to say nothing, silence, and just focus in on feeling what she's feeling. Or what I can do is ask more questions, because usually the questions stop me from fixing. And so the whole idea is sometimes we have to remember that God is working in the other person's life. It's not all on us to fix. And oftentimes God's going to use multiple people, multiple situations to help that person move through sanctification. And sometimes, especially when the pain's deeper, the tendency is we're feeling it more. And so that's when we want to shut it off, in part because of what we're feeling, unfortunately, not just what they're feeling. And so sometimes, like, some therapists refuse to get emotional with their clients for that reason. And so I've, you know, had some clients where they say, like, the last therapist just threw tissues across the coffee table, and it just felt like they weren't there. And that's sometimes what's going on. It's just they've had a rough day, a lot of emotions going on that day, and they're just, like, emotionally spent. And so, and sometimes that also happens just in this situation with spouses. So usually silence is, like, the go-to for most people. Sometimes it's even doing something that we teach our kids to do, which is going to kind of feel really juvenile, but it works. which is take 5 deep breaths. And sometimes that kind of slows us down. And then the last thing is just go to questions. Just ask more questions, more open-ended questions. See if they'll solve it on their own once they feel connected to you. And usually they do. And frankly, what's really kind of interesting is usually the answers they come up with are better than the answers we would have given them. It's so tailored to them, and it's so on the money, like dead on the money for them. And then they feel very valued because they didn't get to that answer without the connection. And so typically they'll really appreciate that you fixed it by not trying to give them advice, but instead by connecting. And so if we can get into that mode, that sometimes helps.
Do you have any advice for when you're on the other side of that table?
When?
Where you're sharing a few emotional hurt with somebody, and you can tell that they're just kind of writhing and they can't stand not fixing it.
Yeah.
It's really intensive.
Yeah. So I unfortunately can do a terrible job when I'm there, because what I'll do is I'll stop talking because I hate being a burden in a way to somebody. And so instead what I'm trying to learn how to do is when I sense they're writhing is just giving a little bit of space and slowing down and then see if they can kind of shift back. And if so, then great. But I'm not an awesome model of handling that, because usually what I do is I stop talking. And then I feel like I'm too much, and then I just kind of leave or whatever. But usually the idea is give them a little space, or you could even ask them, are you okay? How is this? Is this too much? And
usually they're busy trying to explain it at the time.
How it is too much?
No, they're how to fix it.
Oh, how to fix it. Oh, got it. So if somebody's in the active mode of like giving advice and it's skipped in that slide where they skip to the Bible verse or the what is the Lord saying to you kind of statement where it's just not the right timing for it. Literally that's what you can say. And you can, like, so sometimes what I'll say to somebody is something to the effect of, I don't need advice. I really don't. Just connect to me, because I just need to know that I'm not alone in this. I swear to you I'll solve it. I swear to you I will. And that often takes the pressure off the other person from thinking they have to give me the right answer. And instead they can just connect. And then they'll see that usually it does get solved. And sometimes they do say something that adds to it, but it doesn't feel like advice because the connection has now come in. And sometimes we genuinely want the advice. So we genuinely need somebody to correct us. We genuinely need feedback. But usually we need the connection first. Then we can receive all of that way better and change happens way easier. Make sense? Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right, I think we're out of time. Carlton, would you mind closing us in prayer?
Yes. Let's pray. Our Father and our God, we are reminded that you know us completely, that you don't need to investigate our experiences, but you know us inside and out. You number the hairs on our head. We thank you for you who searches the deep things of the heart. Lord, we continue to pray that we would be better at listening and loving and caring for one another, and that the unity of the Spirit would be real among us here at Westminster, and that we would be people who carry the light of Christ and the Spirit of Christ in all of our relationships. Lord, we pray that you would do this for us, and that you would cover all of our offenses through our Redeemer, who was once crucified and is now forever raised for us. For our salvation. And we pray this in his name.
Amen.